Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. Though you may not realize that the ongoing threat of terrorism is affecting your life and that of your loved ones. Each week, Dr. Carol analyzes the hottest topics in terror and helps you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror.
Are all terrorists crazy? Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, a psychiatrist and your terrorist therapist. Have you ever asked yourself that? Are all terrorists crazy? It's kind of like asking, are all murderers crazy? And the answer is, although it does seem crazy to want to kill people, whether you are killing your ex-spouse who you're divorcing and you're fighting over custody, or you're killing non-believers as a terrorist. It seems like a crazy thing to do, but not all of them would actually fit into the psychiatric designation, diagnostic classification, the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that psychiatrists use. Not all of them would meet criteria for an actual mental illness. Now, the reason why this is important is because when terrorists are caught, the question is, should they go to jail or should they go to a psych hospital? Just like with murderers, should they be put away, locked away forever, or given the death penalty for that matter? Or should they be put in a psychiatric hospital? So the reason why this is coming up today, and I have done, if you want to look back in some of my other podcasts, I have done, this question has come up before, and I have addressed it before, whether terrorists are crazy, in different contexts than what I'm going to be talking about with you today. The reason why it's coming up today, what first drew my attention is this new rule, a decree, that has just been taking effect, or at least is going through the political channels in France. It's essentially taken effect, but there is controversy. So it's not 100% yet. But what it is about is, well, first of all, it started with in August 2017 in France, when the Minister of the Interior, Gerard Colomb, reported that one-third of the people who were reported for alleged radicalization had, quote, psychological disorders, les désordres psychologiques, or psychiatric in most cases, I'm sure. So that happened in 2017. And then in 2018, May, this decree was announced that I'm going to tell you about. It was announced, but the actual details weren't fully disclosed until just now. And still, it is facing several appeals. It has become a decree just now, but it is facing several appeals, so it might not continue. And what this is all about is that it's the idea, since if it's true, and you know, I'm sure the statistic of a third of people who were radicalized have psychological disorders in France, the statistic is probably somewhat similar in the U.S., or for that matter, all over, although it has not been very rigorously tested yet. But in any case, since there is this suggestion that at least some, and not an insignificant or insignificant amount of people who are terrorists, who become charged or convicted with terrorism, are mentally ill, then what do we do about that? Should we be doing something to try to prevent these terror attacks by looking at the issue of mental illness? And that's what this decree is about. It is a decree that tells mental health professionals that they need to report patients who they think are in danger of terrorism radicalization. Now, a lot of the mental health professionals have concerns about this because of patient confidentiality. In other words, will patients report the truth about whether they believe in, you know, ISIS or in other terrorist ideas, if they know that if they do report it, they are likely to be reported by the mental health professional to the police or the other French authorities. Now, this is kind of similar to what is happening in the U.S., what has been happening, a controversy in the U.S. about gun control. In that, in some states, there was this question about whether psychiatrists or other mental health professionals should report people who are mentally ill and who have guns or who talk about wanting to get guns. The actual details are still being debated, but it's kind of a similar sort of situation. I mean, yes, there are rules in many states about how people with backgrounds of mental illness, if they have been involuntarily hospitalized, how they are not allowed to buy guns. But this is something a little different. This is more reporting it at an earlier stage before they buy the guns and kill somebody. Now, getting back to France, so what this decree says, and it was put out by the French Minister of Health, Agnès Buzyn, this says that patients who are involuntarily hospitalized, in other words, committed to the hospital, must be reported if they do seem to be in danger of terrorist radicalization. And two streams of information would be merged. So in other words, the psychiatrists or the mental health professionals would give the name and the date of birth to this stream, you know, to this data collection stream. And then it will be combined, merged with a list of profiles from the Terrorism Prevention and Terrorization Reporting File. So, in other words, here are people committed into a psychiatric hospital against their will, and if their names and date of birth will be provided, and if they match the names and date of birth of someone on a terrorism prevention and terrorization file, then regional magistrates and prefects of police in Paris will be notified. So, in other words, these are people who, it's not just, they come to greater attention. You know, I've talked before about how people, there are so many people, not only in France and in Europe, but in the U.S., all over the place, there are so many people who are on these watch lists, and we have seen in various terror attacks how, even including Sri Lanka, for example, how people who were on watch lists, there aren't enough people to watch them. The government doesn't have enough people to watch them. So they slip under the radar, and lo and behold, they perpetrate an attack. So now this is a way to bring people on this terrorism watch list to more immediate attention if they have been committed involuntarily to a psychiatric hospital. Now, there's also in France something called the National Commission for Information, Informatiques. Well, yes, the French. National Commission for Informatiques, information basically, and freedoms, or information that, you know, like these kinds of lists. Now, they're supposed to be consulting on this whole project. But needless to say, there is a lot of controversy about it. But, you know, really, there is something to be said for it. And I will explain why. It's because people who have psychiatric disorders, particularly, I'm talking about mainly psychotic psychiatric disorders like schizophrenia and manic depressive illness, which is also called bipolar, there are reasons why people with these mental illnesses are more vulnerable to radicalization. And when we come back, I will tell you what those reasons are. So stay tuned. Welcome back. Before the break, I promised I was going to tell you about why people with mental illness, particularly those with psychotic mental illnesses, are more vulnerable to radicalization. And I will do that. And this is all in the as part of the today's topic, which is, are all terrorists crazy? Now, you may think, you may be horrified by the idea that I, as a psychiatrist and a forensic psychiatrist at that, would say that, would either say that terrorists are crazy or say that crazy. I'm not saying that crazy people are all terrorists. Let me clarify that part. We all know that. They don't all become terrorists, but there are reasons why people with these psychotic mental illnesses like schizophrenia and manic depressive illness are more vulnerable to radicalization. And some of these things are, some of these reasons are, well, the main reason is that these psychoses, and by definition mean that the person is out of touch with reality. They have hallucinations and or delusions. So what does this mean? This means that they are more able to swallow the propaganda put out by terrorists, whether it's on the internet or whether it's actually in person meeting a terrorist who wants to radicalize them. And this is made all the easier because people with these psychotic mental illnesses are most often ostracized and are on the fringes of society, unless, of course, they're in treatment. but if they're not in treatment, they are typically unable to work, unable to maintain strong relationships with their family, and unable to make friends. Again, I'm talking about if they are not treated. I have treated countless hundreds, if not thousands, of people with schizophrenia and manic depressive illness. And I can tell you that they can be productive members of society if they are in treatment, meaning psychotherapy plus medication. Now, another reason why they are vulnerable to radicalization is because of age. Schizophrenia typically comes on, the first break of schizophrenia typically comes on between age 18 and 25. Or even a little later. But those are the ripe ages. These are the typical ages that people become radicalized to become terrorists. Now, manic depressive illness or bipolar becomes manifest a little later, more like the 25 to 30 ages. It's not only at these ages, but this is the typical presentation. So all of these reasons make these people more vulnerable to becoming radicalized. Now, I'm going to tell you about two cases that have just been in the news, and they of terrorists who have just been charged or sentenced, and they illustrate this point. Both of them do have a psychiatric history. One of them is more definite than the other, but they give the examples of how complicated it becomes to try to decide whether they should be sentenced to jail or sentenced to a psychiatric hospital. The first one is a man named Adel Daoud. And in 2012, good old Adele plotted a terrorist attack in Chicago. Now, he was 18 at the time in 2012. So again, the typical ripe onset for schizophrenia. I do not know. It has not been made public exactly what diagnosis he's been given. But the reason why he's in the news today is because he was just sentenced to 16 years in prison for his Chicago terrorist plot. So in 2012, he pressed a detonator on what he thought was a car bomb in downtown Chicago. And now he is saying that he was crazy at the time. So in 2012, he was arrested. Again, he was 18. He was arrested on federal charges for planning a terrorist attack, a car bomb. And the way that he was caught was that an FBI agent, undercover agent, posed as an Islamist jihadist, and he offered Adele a fake car bomb, a 1,000-pound fake car bomb. And Dayoud believed that it was a real bomb, and he tried to detonate it in a Jeep outside a restaurant in downtown Chicago called the Cactus Bar and Grill. Now, at the time when he was charged, a judge declared him mentally incompetent, and meaning that he was not competent to stand trial, and I will tell you what that means in a minute. But not only did he try to detonate this bomb outside the Cactus Bar and Grill, but he also had a list of other targets that he was planning to attack. Nightclubs, bars, movie theaters, and other public locations in Chicago. Now, how do you become incompetent to stand trial? Well, first of all, you have to be competent, you have to understand the charges brought against you. That's the first thing. You have to really have an understanding, a reasonable understanding of the charges brought against you. And you have to be able to aid in your own defense, which means you have to be able to know what the judge does, what the lawyers do. You have to be able to talk to your lawyer in a way that makes sense to, you know, help your lawyer defend you, basically. Now, that is different from not guilty by reason of insanity. The competency test comes at the beginning of a trial, you know, to see whether you are able actually to stand trial. The not guilty by reason of insanity comes at the end of a trial, if that is what is proven, that you have a mental disease or defect which made you unable to determine right or wrong at the time of the crime. So getting back to Adele Dayoud, so he was charged, he was found incompetent to stand trial, and he was, I'm trying to give you this in the right time frame. Now, at the time that he was brought to trial, the prosecutors wanted to give him 40 years, and the defense wanted to just give him psychiatric treatment. So in 2016, now again, this was 2012 when he was arrested and charged. In 2016, the U.S. District Judge Sharon Coldman, that's when she decided that he was mentally incompetent because he claimed, I mean, she had to have decided that in 2012 as well, because he was put in jail. Well, he was put in jail, and then in 2016, she declared that he should be put in a psychiatric hospital for at least 3 months and treated, and then he would be brought back to court to see if he could stand trial. So, some of the reasons why she thought he was mentally incompetent was because he claimed that the prosecutors and his lawyers were Illuminati-employed Freemasons. In other words, people who were specially enlightened. These were secret people, he believed, who were specially had special religious enlightenments. He really, it was just psychotic. And he also thought that his lawyers and the judge were lizards. So he was put in a psychiatric facility for at least 3 months and treated. And then when he was brought back to court, he took an Alford plea, meaning that it wasn't exactly a pure guilty. It's a plea where you concede that the prosecutors have evidence to convict you, but you don't admit that you did anything wrong. So he was sentenced. So that, as I said, he was just sentenced. That's the news. That's why he's in the news. He was just sentenced to 16 years in prison for his original 2012 plot. You know, his original attempt, not just a plot, but his attempt to detonate this bomb that fortunately, you know, was not real. And at his sentencing, he apologized to his parents, to the Muslim community, to the court, and to the United States. And he said that all of his psychiatric medications and his treatment while he was in jail made him realize that he was crazy during the time that he plotted his terrorist attacks. Now, was he? You know, was he really? Or did he come to his senses enough now to know that that's what he should say to get a lesser sentence? But obviously, there was enough proof to convince the judge somewhat, although he was still given 16 years in prison, not in a psych hospital. But again, the prosecutors had wanted 40 years. So it did impress the judge to some extent. But when we come back, I will talk to you about another example of this whole conundrum, crazy or pure terrorist, of a case in Arizona that has this similar question to be posed. So stay tuned and we'll be right back. Welcome back to today's show where we're talking about, are all terrorists crazy? Again, this is similar to asking whether all murderers in general are crazy. And of course, the reason to ask this, one reason is to decide whether they should go to jail when they're convicted or to a psychiatric hospital. And the reason why this is coming up today is because a couple of different people have been convicted on or arrested and or convicted of and sentenced to on terrorism charges, where this whole issue of insanity came up. And also because of what the French are doing with this decree saying that mental health professionals have to provide the names and the date of birth of any patient who's been involuntarily hospitalized against their will to who seem vulnerable, not just any patient who's been hospitalized against their will, but if they seem in danger of being radicalized by terrorists. And, you know, that's a distinction that a psychiatrist would have to make, and which is not easy, because not everybody who's psychotic is necessarily in danger of being radicalized by terrorists. I mean, a lot depends upon who they're going home to, for example. You know, if I was treating a patient in the hospital who had been hospitalized against his will, one of the things I would use to decide whether they are vulnerable to terrorist radicalization would be, what kind of aftercare are they going to get? Are they living alone? Are they do they have a job? Do they have a family who's going to look out for them, or friends who make sure that they will come for treatment every week or every month and keep taking their medications? Or are they just going to be, you know, out in the street? And how much of the time do they have hallucinations and or delusions, which will, you know, which makes them more vulnerable to believing the propaganda that terrorists will feed them? Because after all, if you're having hallucinations or delusions about crazy kinds of things, how difficult is it to believe what terrorists, radical Islamist terrorists tell you in terms of why non-believers should be killed and how you are going to go to heaven. You're going to be a martyr. You're going to get international attention. Well, that's not crazy to believe you're going to get international attention, because yes, terrorists do get that. So that's not being crazy, but but then telling them that they're going to be martyrs and they're going to go to heaven and they're going to get 72 virgins. I mean, really, that doesn't sound particularly crazy to someone who already has hallucinations and delusions about all kinds of stuff. And oftentimes it's religious stuff, but particularly people who are either paranoid schizophrenic or in a manic state, they will often have religious hallucinations and delusions. So it's really even easier if they have those kinds of psychotic behaviors for them to believe what a terrorist tells them about what will happen if, well, what will happen if they don't kill non-believers and what will happen if they do. So they are more vulnerable. So these are the people who now in France, again, it is still a controversy and it's facing appeals, but for right now, they need to decide if patients are vulnerable to terrorist radicalization, and they need to report the names. And that, as I was saying before, is going to be compared to a list, a watch list of people who seem to be, that the government is watching as potentially capable of terrorist attacks. I think this is a good idea. I know you might be surprised that as a psychiatrist I am saying this, but as a psychiatrist who has treated countless psychotic people and still do, I think it's actually a way of protecting them. It's not a punitive thing. I know it might sound punitive at first, but it is really protecting them against themselves, because in the case that I just described of Adel Daoud, who now that he's been treated with therapy, although I don't know how much therapy he has gotten in jail in Chicago, but unfortunately people don't get very much therapy in jail, but he did get medication. And he is now at his sentencing apologizing and saying that he realizes that he was crazy in 2012 when he was 18 and tried to bomb the Cactus Bar and Grill. So now he's sentenced to 16 years in prison. If he had gotten treatment before he was influenced by the FBI undercover agent, that's a whole other thing. I'm sure his attorneys tried to say entrapment of a vulnerable, mentally ill man, but it didn't get them super far. He still got 16 years, but at least he didn't get 40. So now I'm going to tell you about a man in Arizona named Ishmael Hamed. He's 18, and he was just charged with terrorism and spreading Islamic State propaganda. Now, his story begins in January, and again, 18, that is the year, that is the age, that is typically when schizophrenia first manifests. So now, January 2019, he contacted 911, and he was outside of a sheriff station, and he told the 911 dispatcher that he wanted to talk to a sheriff's deputy. And a sergeant came outside and contacted him outside the sheriff's station, and Ishmael began throwing rocks at the sergeant and began coming towards him with a knife. So he was then charged with two counts of terrorism and aggravated assault. And he was then taken in, of course, and the sheriff's office began doing an investigative report. Oh, also, when he called the 911 dispatcher, the reason why he was, you know, charged with a terrorist attack, not just, you know, trying to kill a sheriff, was because when he called the 911 dispatcher, he swore allegiance to ISIS, and then he committed the assault. Also, so in the investigation of him after he's been arrested, he was found to have used electronic communication to spread ISIS propaganda to his friends. He was just sharing it with his friends. You know, what's wrong with that, right? And some of these things that he shared included his admiration of Omar Mateen and a video of Anwar al-Awlaki, who is the English-speaking cleric. He's now deceased. Who I've talked about him before. He is recognized as an authority who justifies the violence attacks of non-believers. So that's what he was steeped in, Ismail Hamid. He worked at places like Target and Lowe's, and his coworkers before he called 911 and got himself in trouble, his coworkers had noticed that he had odd behavior. So, for example, he worked at Target, and he used the employee radio to shout out inappropriate messages like, "We are under attack," and like, "We are under heavy fire." When he was a cashier at Target, he stood on the grocery belt and he yelled, "Bomb." Now, one would have thought that he would have been, and presumably he was, fired from there. But, you know, if he would have gotten psychiatric treatment at that time, they would have stopped him from getting himself in more trouble and calling 911 and saying that he is pledging his allegiance to ISIS. He also worked at Lowe's, and his coworkers there described him as a little weird. And one coworker said, for example, "You better keep an eye on that guy." And again, you know, he was not referred to doesn't say anything about his having been, 911 being called to take him to a psychiatric hospital. So he is still in the investigation stage. A lot of what has come out in the investigative report just now is redacted. So he is going through the courts, and it's too early at this point to say exactly what is going to happen to him in terms of whether he's going to be treated psychiatrically or just charged with terrorist attacks that require X amount of jail time. Now, you know, I mean, ideally, this is someone who also should be sent to a psychiatric hospital, because the things that he is reported to have done are a little more than just odd behavior, inappropriate messages. I mean, people are so afraid to be considered non-PC that instead of getting people help who are clearly more than odd, they I guess fired him, but they don't do anything to help him. Let me tell you, if you see somebody, if you know somebody, or you come across somebody who is doing things like this, please do more than say, "Hey, that guy is odd," not just because they might ultimately perpetrate a terror attack someday soon, and also because they might at home be searching the internet for videos, you know, ISIS propaganda and so on, that then push them to perpetrate an attack. But because they need psychiatric help. I mean, the kinds of things that he was shouting seem like he was responding to command hallucinations or delusions. He was obviously deluded, you know, saying, "We are under attack, we are under heavy fire." In his mind, it seems like he was really believing that. So clearly that is psychotic. Well, thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist. Reported that he has been radicalized over the last 2 years. Because they're, what they mean is, you know, radicalized in terms of hate. Because before then, before 2 years ago, he had friends who were Jews and Blacks. And he has said, John Ernest himself has said, if you told me even 6 months ago that I would do this, I would have been surprised. And then he wrote online just an hour before his attack, he wrote, I'm just a normal dude who wanted to have a family, help and heal people, and play piano. He said he planned this attack for 4 weeks. And he said, I'm a testament to the fact that literally anyone can do this. That is unfortunately very true. So what is the answer? You know, the antidote to radical Islamist hate is love. And the antidote to any hate that is popping up now against moving targets, the flavor of the month, means that we need all the more love. It is really... I mean, how many more attacks on how many different kinds of targets do there have to be before we start taking this more seriously, folks, in terms of really, really making an effort to provide love, not just to your family and friends, but even to strangers, lost strangers. Well, thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
If you would like to find out more about terrorism from me, your terrorist therapist, visit my website, terroristtherapist.com. And if you're a parent or teacher and want to build stronger nests for your kids to become more resilient, check out my new award-winning book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. It's the first and only book about terrorism for kids. You can find it wherever books are sold or directly from the publisher at terrorismforkids.com. Terrorism, the number four, kids.com. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. We hope listening to the show has made you feel calmer, more resilient, and more able to reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. You can also check out past shows on Renegade Talk Archives for more insights.